This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Monday, November 12, 2012. Yesterday was Veterans Day, and state and federal offices and many businesses are observing the holiday today. Governor Hickenlooper released the following statement. Nearly 1 in 10 Coloradans have fought and served our country. On this Veterans Day weekend and on every day, we are so thankful and very proud of our military veterans and those active duty or National Guard still serving here and overseas. We want to especially honor those who gave their lives for our country. Their sacrifice is not forgotten. We must also not forget the families who support these brave men and women. On behalf of all Colorado, thank you. Hearings over the application for the proposed Pinyon Ridge Mill near Bedrock have been going on and will continue through tomorrow. The Montrose Daily Press reports that a very different atmosphere than the angry shouting matches of 2010 was seen in Nucla Saturday. Witnesses continued to make their way through a variety of scientific and technical materials on day 4 of a planned 6-day hearing. Public and expert testimony regarding the proposed Bedrock Area Energy Fuels Uranium Yellow Cake Mill is being gathered in a courtroom format under the eye of Judge Mediator Richard Dana. The hearing was planned after a Denver District Court judge ruled in June that State Department of Public Health and Environment public participation in the energy fuels license process was inadequate, and he ordered the permit canceled. New hearings were ordered to resolve a lawsuit by Telluride-based Sheep Mountain Alliance and others filed against the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Approximately 150,000 pages of documentation are under evaluation, with new exhibits presented as slides by expert witnesses during their testimony. The hearing is revisiting much of the material submitted prior to the approval of the energy fuels license in 2011. According to the press, the courtroom format allows for detailed examination and rebuttal of testimony, and the official record of expert concerns will be far more comprehensive than 2010's. The format also appears to have squelched much of the emotion that marked the hearings 2 years ago. Sheep Mountain Alliance's Hillary White suggested the value of these hearings is to get information into the court record for use in later court filings. Quoting White, "Our goal with the hearing is to have, for the first time, a record that includes official analytical information in the license application that we will be able to legally use however necessary. Before, CDPHE played by their own rules and with blatant disregard for the regulatory process." She continued, "We won't sue if CDPHE does things right and sends the application back, adds analytical information from these hearings, hires independent experts to evaluate expert testimony instead of just energy fuels and themselves. There should be a new process." End quote. CDPHE's Steve Tarleton agreed Friday, saying that Sheep Mountain Alliance, quote, "made it clear before there was ever a license application that they would fight it. This hearing won't change that." End quote. Much of the testimony accuses Energy Fuels or the CDPHE of misfeasance and possibly malfeasance in the execution of their responsibilities related to the application and accompanying data. More detailed information can be found in yesterday's Montrose Daily Press. The hearing ends Tuesday. Public oral or written comments will not be accepted after 4 p.m. today. Comments can be submitted to rdana at jaginc.com. And the press reports there is a speakerphone to participate silently in the hearing or to submit oral comments and at 888-399-7768. There is a code to enter. KVNF will note this information on our website along with the posting of today's news broadcast. The Bureau of Land Management has settled on a 2/3 as opposed to a previously proposed 3/4 reduction in land to be made available for potential oil shale development in 3 western states. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports the agency released a final proposal Friday that would make about 677,000 acres open for application for oil shale leasing in Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming. That compares to about 2 million acres under a 2008 decision under the Bush administration. But it's up substantially from the 462,000 acres that would have been made available under a draft BLM proposal released earlier this year. KVNF reported on that at the time. This final proposal, however, further lowers the acreage in Colorado from that proposed in the draft plan. The BLM is proposing making about 26,000 acres available for lease applications in Colorado, compared to about 360,000 acres made available in 2008 and about 35,000 acres in the draft proposal earlier this year. The world's largest known oil shale deposits are in the three states, with the richest deposits centered in Rio Blanco and Garfield counties. The final BLM proposal carries forward the draft proposal that only research, development, and demonstration leases would be issued at first, a requirement not part of the 2008 plan. Commercial leases would be issued only when a lessee satisfies conditions, including those in the RD&D lease. Also Friday, the BLM in Colorado said it signed an RD&D lease with ExxonMobil Exploration Company and Natural Soda Holdings Incorporated. The leases are for technologies the two companies are planning to test to develop oil shale in place underground in Rio Blanco County. The leases take effect December 1st. The agency reconsidered the 2008 allocation as part of a lawsuit settlement with conservation groups. Counties that are home to oil shale deposits have called on the agency to leave the 2008 decision unchanged. The BLM said in its news release that the acreage changes between the draft and final proposal reflect its correction of acreage identified as lands with wilderness characteristics in Wyoming, reevaluation of some lands designated as areas of critical environmental concern, and refinements to management of greater sage-grouse habitat to reflect information from state wildlife agencies. The BLM's latest shale and tar sands land allocation proposal for the three states is subject to a 30-day protest period and a 60-day review by the three states' governors before it can make a final decision. The BLM's final programmatic environmental impact statement on oil, shale, and tar sands land allocations is available on a website, which KVNF will post with today's news at our website, kvnf.org. Moving on to elections. 2 days after Colorado voters approved a controversial amendment legalizing marijuana for recreational use, the Montrose City Council announced plans to draft a moratorium banning the commercial distribution of pot within city limits. The Watch reports that the moratorium will likely be voted on at the next regular session of the City Council on November 20th. Though Amendment 64, which allows people 21 and older to possess up to an ounce of marijuana, passed in Colorado, voters soundly rejected it in Montrose County. According to The Watch, Montrose Mayor Kathy Ellis said she wants to honor constituents' wishes. The Colorado amendment could take effect early next year. City Attorney Russ Duray told The Watch that the city has the authority to prohibit marijuana sales. 2 years ago, the city and county of Montrose banned medical marijuana dispensaries. The Watch reports that according to state law, Governor John Hickenlooper has until January 5th to issue a proclamation certifying the amendment vote. It is still unknown what the federal government's response will be to Colorado and Washington, which passed a similar measure. President Barack's county-by-county victories in Colorado virtually mirrored the vote to legalize marijuana use in the state. In all but eight mostly rural counties, pot passed in places that supported the president's re-election bid and failed in places that supported Republican challenger Mitt Romney. The iNews Network reports that only one highly populated Front Range county had different results, Weld County, where voters backed both Romney and legalizing pot. The rest of the pro-pot, pro-Romney voters were small, I think that's anti-pot, pro-Romney voters were small rural counties scattered across the high country, western slope, and southwestern parts of the state. iNews reports that, in the view of several political operatives and observers, Obama's broad support may have played a big hand in the passage of Amendment 64. Lori Weigel of Public Opinion Strategies told iNews, quote, "I think that the pot people ought to be patting the Obama people on the back. The tail didn't wag the dog." Weigel, who has been involved in polling for candidates and ballot measures in Colorado for more than 15 years, says she believes the link between Obama's win and the passage of Amendment 64 can be attributed to younger voters. iNews reports that although demographic data on those who actually voted in Colorado hasn't been compiled, Obama was widely credited with doing much better than Romney among voters in the 18 to 29 age group, and that group was also expected to provide the heaviest support to the marijuana legalization measure. This year, Colorado was poised to surpass the historic voter turnout from 2008. A release from the Secretary of State's office touted their efforts this year to clean up voter rolls and increase awareness about voter registration. According to the office, in addition to a huge domestic increase, there was also an 11% surge in participation from military and overseas voters. The release states, quote, "By making it easy to vote but tough to cheat, we've seen increased participation in our elections while preserving the election integrity that Coloradans expect and deserve," end quote. Republican Secretary of State Scott Gessler's office has been criticized lately from county clerks and is currently under investigation for possible misuse of public funds. One of the major developments stemming from the election is that the health care law will go forward. In Colorado, up to half a million more people are expected to get health insurance. But there are still many Americans who don't understand what it means to them. From Colorado Public News, Carol McKinley reports on what to expect.
The new health care law can be confusing even without those campaign ads. Michelle Leake, CEO of the Colorado Health Institute, says the law won't change your insurance if you already have coverage.
If you're like 60% of Coloradans who get their health insurance through their employer, not much is going to change for you. If you don't have health insurance, you're going to have a lot of options.
Families of four who make less than about $100,000 a year can get a tax credit to reduce the cost of health care. Almost everyone will be required by law to buy health coverage or pay a tax, but the tax is a lot less expensive.
We're going to have people who decide that they'd rather pay the fine than buy health insurance.
Leake says having more Americans covered is key.
So getting young, healthy people to buy insurance is the linchpin of this program.
But one important part of the program is uncertain due to tight budgets. It's the plan to extend free government Medicaid insurance to people earning up to $16,000 a year. That's close to what someone earns full-time at the minimum wage. In Colorado, that's 200,000 people working in jobs like fast food and retail. Their fate is up in the air. Carol McKinley, Colorado Public News.
And finally, a bipartisan group of Western senators, including Mark Udall and Michael Bennett of Colorado, have asked Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack to use the timber industry to reduce fuel loads in wildfire-prone areas and improve community safety throughout the West. In a letter to Vilsack, the senators said that historically overgrown forests, a continuing drought, vast stretches of beetle-kill forest, and more people living in fire zones has increased the need for ecological restoration. They asked Vilsack to expand timber sales in more parts of their states, particularly in the wildland-urban interface. Quote, There has never been a better time to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires, restore forest health, and create jobs while also helping us convert hazardous fuels into energy," end quote. This year, the Rocky Mountain West experienced one of the most severe fire seasons on record. This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.